It is Saturday, August 5th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today, we're focusing on online poker and taking news and calls.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our show, we're talking with a professional poker player and how he has transitioned from Vegas to the online world. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Get in the queue. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the airroom with me are geeks John Tracy, technical support engineer at Surf Control, Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning, Lyle.
Howdy. Turn on John there, Lyle.
Yeah, you got it.
Testing.
So,
come in. Calling Commando Cody.
Since John's got the voice today, we'll start with you, sir, on news.
Speaking of Commando Cody, the Hubble constant is no longer constant.
Ah, good. Glad we got rid of that. What's the Hubble constant?
Hubble constant, named after Edwin Hubble, the guy who built the Hubble Space Telescope. No, wait. The guy that Hubble Space Telescope's named after came up with a constant. If you look at a star and you see how much of the properties of that star are redshifted, there's a series of equations you can use to determine how far that star away is using this constant he established.
Okay, this is a fundamental concept that defines so much about what we know about astronomy, right? And in general the properties of light, and the universe is defined in a lot of ways by this constant.
We figured out the age and probable size of the universe using the Hubble constant.
And the basic concept is that every material that we know of has a registration of light that it emanates. Hydrogen has a certain spectrum analysis, if you will.
Right.
And that spectrum is pretty clearly little stripes that photons come out at frequencies
in the lab, by hydrogen. In the lab, if you burn hydrogen, take that light, break it through a prism.
Excite it, right.
Right. It burns, and it has certain lines
in it. A light fingerprint.
Exactly. So you know what it is statically. Then you can look at the light from a star, take those same lines, and say, wow, those have shifted this much. Therefore, using the Hubble constant, we can figure out how far away that star is.
It's actually a ruler.
It's actually what's...
it's a little
kind of...
It's
a tape measure, actually.
But let me be clear that it's not the distance defining the light change. It's the speed difference between us.
Exactly.
So imagine a car with a horn, and it's going meep, and
it's the
passes
Doppler
you.
Effect. I bet most people know the Doppler.
Right. Okay, so it's not constant? What do you mean?
He developed this in about 1920s at 500 kilometers per second is what he came up with.
Okay.
Since 1958, we've figured out it's more really about 75 kilometers per second. It's been reduced to about 72. But for the last 50 years, it's been a constant. It's been between 72 and 75. So just recently, a group of astronomers in Ohio, headed by Chris Stanek, found out that it's actually 15% off. They measured a galaxy, the M33 cluster known as the Triangulum Galaxy, and they found that it's actually 15% further away than it was initially thought.
Oh, okay.
Using a new series of calculations based on current instrumentation.
Okay. I think what the constant would be then is what the general universe, how it's expanding, and therefore the speed objects are, and therefore the distance things are, depending on
how
fast they are.
Yeah, the calculations we've used to determine how far everything is away.
The physics of the shifting is not changed. We're talking about the constant of the universe.
Right, okay. The number they plug in when they determine the distance. So we thought we had figured out how old the universe was, 13.7 billion years old. It's actually 15% older than that.
Wow.
And we figured out how big it is. You know, well, speed of light, 13.7 sure. billion years, 13.7 million.
So how old is the universe? Do you get that number?
Well, it's another 15%. It's about 16
billion?
Yeah, about 16 billion years old. So
why did we make a mistake the first time, John?
We were basing it upon an equation that was created in 1920 and has been worked on up until about 1958. We haven't done much with that equation since then. We have a lot more technology, a lot newer technology available to us to make finer studies. And these people developed a new, actually a much simpler equation to determine it. That's the reason. They weren't originally trying to find a new constant. They were originally trying to find an easier way to determine
it. To solve what's going on.
It's a lot of work. Uh-huh. I mean, there's like a whole series of, you know, Fibonacci equation you have to go through to figure this out.
Well, thank you, John, very much for that update. I appreciate it. I'm glad to know that the universe is a little older because I like feeling insignificant. I'm going to go to Mr. Cleveland. Sean, hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Morning. What you got for us?
Well, the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Treasury in May decided to discontinue a federal 3% excise tax on long-distance telephone service.
Wait, they got rid of a tax on telephones?
Yes.
It must be a fairly new tax. When was that?
Actually, this tax was imposed in 1898 to help fund the Spanish-American War.
That's
you've mentioned this to me before, this idea that
more
this
than
like,
100 yeah. years ago.
And the money has been going...
Where?
Yeah, they don't...
Still
no one really talks
Spanish
about that.
That's right.
I'm sure it's funding some war somewhere.
They're still buying muskets.
Buying fatigues. Yeah.
It's a good thing we don't do war anymore and we can get rid of this.
So this went away on August 1st.
How much does it mean for most people that have long-distance phones?
Well, there's no math on that either.
Oh, okay.
You know, I don't think anybody wants to talk about the money that's been raised or how much that's going to cost anyone.
The most expensive Verizon... war ever.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, yeah.
More money has been raised for this war than any other war in history. So 3% is quite a bit. At tax time, you can claim a refund on your 2007 taxes for all the money collected retroactively to February 2003.
It's
a fair amount of money.
But you had to have a landline to do this, right? This doesn't affect cell phones?
Actually, this does.
No way. So we all get a tax refund.
Any long distance. So take a look at your last year's long distance bills and see if you can find this tax. Does it say Spanish-American War or does it say something else?
Hey, you know, I'd talk to a tax expert.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
It's going to affect long distance bundled service. They decided not to apply the tax to wireless, voice over internet, protocol service, prepaid telephone cards.
So it hasn't been initiated in new stuff.
It has not been initiated on that kind of stuff. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Sean, thank you for the update on the Spanish-American War. I'm glad that it's very geeky.
Oh, this is like the day of things that have changed over the last 100 years.
Major fundamental shifts in the universe.
Speaking of major fundamental shifts, we do a lot of electronic voting, and there's a lot of concerns and problems with electronic voting. Something that's not changed at all is that these systems are just totally untrustable.
Apparently that remains the case. There's a constant for us all, right? So the worst ever security flaw has been found in the Diebold TS, which is their electronic voting system. If you go to the openvotingfoundation.org site, which is just like I said, openvotingfoundation.org, they did a press release last week talking about how the machines that ship out have particular pieces of code that are on them, and the machines are set in certain ways to behave certain ways. Apparently, there's a switch, a single switch you can flip inside the machine, which changes that code to another set of code that's already stored in the machine and makes it behave in a completely different way.
And what's that second set of code do?
Well,
like randomize the players or create John Does and such?
They don't go into the details on that. It just says that it's behave in a completely different manner compared to its tested and certified version.
Oh,
so the question is, am I pushing buttons that are really producing the results that I should be seeing?
So it's basically one of those situations where a programmer leaves in all these method calls and leaves all the stuff in there that's not really being used because it's not part of the test flow, and changing one little thing will switch over to this stuff that hasn't been tested. That's bad.
It can boot from two different places, putting two different totally separate sets of code in the memory, and then it even can be field upgraded in minutes and selected in a programmable flash memory portion, which then can run live code at the moment. So
if you were savvy, you could go into a voting poll, play with the machine for a second, and change its results.
That's kind of the concern they're raising. I'm not about to say how realistic that actually is, because I don't picture somebody going in and hacking their way into a machine live, but it's possible.
And I don't know, changing one machine? I mean, that would change, you know, hundreds of votes in a national election. That's not so huge. I guess if you had, like, a bunch of people in on it. You can change hundreds of thousands of miles.
The thing that's so scary about these dipole machines is there's no paper trail. So let's say that happens. No one even knows it happens. I mean, it's one of those things that when you start making things easier for yourselves and trusting technology, but the technology is set up in such a way that you can really get messed up, you're taking the worst of both worlds. I know, John, you about a year ago when we were talking about voting the last time, online voting, you said pencil, paper, that's what you want.
Yep.
But you're a geek. Yep. You still feel that way?
Oh, yeah.
Because
we know too much. I mean, one of the points they're saying is that this stuff should be open for everyone to review all the time, no questions asked, none of this privacy stuff belonging to code for voting machines. These findings underscore the need for open testing and certification. There's no way such a security vulnerability should be allowed. These systems should be recalled.
Well, do you feel that way too?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I know too much.
You want transparency.
Why hide it? What's the problem?
Yeah.
Why not make this open to the thousands and millions of people that are able to look at code and look at machines and design better information systems?
They're holding their cards close to their chest. Drew, Sean, John, thank you very much for doing the news. Stay with us. We're now going to talk to our guest today. Tom has been playing poker professionally for over 30 years. Recently, he stopped traveling to Vegas to make his money and instead plays online poker. Tom, thank you for being on GeekSpeak today.
You're welcome.
So, I see you every once in a while on a laptop at a coffee shop we frequent, and you're working. Now, I work on my laptop. I do about, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, most of the time more. And that's my living, so 40 hours a week. How much do you work?
I'm guessing that I average about 7 hours a week. A week, yeah. Maybe an hour a day.
And your work's a little different in structure than mine. Mine is, get a whole bunch of tasks done. Yours is try to be better at a game than somebody else and take their money. Mm-hmm. The traditional gambling kind of thing. How much money do you make?
Can give us a range.
somewhere between, I'd say, 200 and 500,000 a year.
You do well.
Yeah.
So how long have you been successful playing poker?
I've been successful since I started, which was 32 years ago.
Okay. So 32 years of playing poker, that's your profession. Do you make money? Do you have like a day job too? Do you have any other kind of source? Mm-hmm. Have you in the last 30 years done anything else?
Never had any other source of income.
So it's 7 hours a week right now. It's 7 hours a week of play. Yeah. You don't have to travel for it. And you're playing poker, but it's a job.
Right.
And you do other things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, man, that sounds
before
weird.
The internet. That must have been.
So, what was it like?
It was slavery before the.
What describe your work 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. 10 years ago, I would have been. I moved around quite a bit. All through Nevada and California. 10 years ago, I guess I was probably still playing in San Jose and up near San Francisco at a place called Lucky Chances or Artichoke Joe's.
It really focused around a casino.
You had to go and sit at a table in order to make money.
It was all about casinos.
Okay, and describe the games. Like, what kind of hands, how much money were you playing per hand in those games?
Probably averaging a few thousand per hand, something like that, or a couple thousand.
So money that's like, it matters if you win or not. And you've got to have enough of a backing, a bankroll, if you will, so that you can maintain playing. I mean,
you must lose some of these, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of losing. But, it's like I tell people often, you can lose any day, any week, any month. And I haven't never had a losing year. So just like the probability of casinos and their games, they have a built-in edge. Well, you could say that I have a built-in edge.
Yours is a little thicker than theirs.
It's a little thicker. It's quite a bit thicker, actually. That's a good point. And they do it by volume. I do it in much smaller volume.
So there's a lot of gambling out there. And like most of the systems are set up in such a way that the house is going to make money and everybody else that plays the game is going to lose money. Poker's not that way.
No.
And you play Texas Hold'em, right?
Correct.
So in Texas Hold'em, the house just takes a little bit of every pot. So they're getting a percentage just to set up the environment. That's true at a casino. That's true online.
That's right.
And all the players are the ones that bring the money in and lose the money and win the money.
Mm-hmm.
So the house actually has 100% success rate in a poker game.
That's correct.
It's just like running a car wash.
And we are desirable entities in that world because as opposed to, say, a professional blackjack player or some of the other games that maybe pros came in and infiltrated in the casinos, they didn't like them at all. In fact, they got the boot. where we would get comped, you know, rooms and
because
and
the
dinners.
Truth is, if you're not setting up the game, the game's not happening. They're not making any money.
That's correct. Right? Yeah, and it's hard for the amateurs, at least in casinos. The amateurs seldom are going to come and start the games themselves. There was often a few pros sitting around, and then the amateurs build around them. And before you know it, you got one game, and then two games, and then three games.
So unless you really know what you're doing, don't go to a poker game in casino.
Unless you're just there for fun. Yeah.
Okay. So you're one of those guys that
it's fun to throw thousands of dollars over
a
cliff.
It is for some people, believe it or not. There's some very wealthy people who find that amusing. Lose a few hundred thousand a year.
I'd find it amusing as long as I was on the side of the cliff catching it.
Yeah. Right.
So Tom, when it used to be that you'd call up the casino and say, "I'm coming into town for the weekend," and they'd hook you up and they'd give you free food and all that, and you'd play with people you knew and people you didn't know, hopefully leaving at the end of the weekend with a lot more money than you came with.
Yeah, except you weren't really calling in. I mean, we just show up. You show up at the casino and there's, well, with a few exceptions, once in a while I'd call in. I actually would have a limo would pick me up down in L.A. on occasion, but that was kind of a special deal. But for the most part, we just show up and... if they give us something, fine. We don't. It's not the perks aren't really worth very much.
Right.
It's mostly about just making a living. So you show up and you get on a list. You might wait for an hour or two to get into a good game, the whole process is very slow and painstaking in a lot of ways in the casinos. That's changed with online poker. You're in immediately. There's no waiting around. You sit at home or whatever. It's better and. In 20 different ways.
Yeah, a casino, though, does have a whole bunch of rules around it. The law supports the casino's actions so that you know that you go in when you do a game like slots or something, you know that the thing's not going to cheat you. But online poker, this whole thing where the U.S. government doesn't actually know how to regulate it exactly, and it's not even really U.S. because the casino places are actually outside the U.S. because there's less regulation.
They're all based outside the U.S.
So couldn't you just take one of these big online sites that you've got thousands of money in it, and couldn't they just close one day and take all your money? Is that a concern for you?
Yeah, it is a concern because I certainly don't know, and I suspect hardly anybody knows what would happen if a site ever closed down, but... with a success rate, I find that very unlikely.
You explained this to me pretty well. We talked the other day. What do you mean? Why do you think it's unlikely that they close down?
Well, first of all, as far as I can tell, those sites, with very few exceptions, are doing extremely well. It's almost, you know, like printing money. As far as I can tell, it's pretty low overhead, and there's a hell of an income.
Can you give me a kind of statistics or kind of
give us a bulb? Like how much
like
percentage
kind of thing?
Is the house taking, and what's the usual average pot?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think part is I'm not that up on these things.
Yeah, just kind of making stuff.
Party
up.
Poker is I think still the biggest site. That moves around. Some different sites do better, but. And I think at any one day they might have 50,000 people playing online. Now you divide that by, say, 7 or 8 to build a table. And at each table, each hand, which is probably dealt off in 2-3 minutes, they're taking $1 to $3. So you can do the math. It's
50 a lot. Divided by 8 times $2 per minute.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
That's probably fairly close.
And this is 24/7 as opposed to the
casino,
right?
Well, exactly. Actually, yeah, and the casinos, the games would break, more likely to break, and only go maybe 8, 10, 12 hours where online, obviously, and they're all over the world and everybody's on different.
Sure.
So it really can go 24 hours a day.
With like 50,000 users, assuming that one of these large sites has that many users playing at any
time. 17
million. What's that?
17 million.
Thank you.
17 million.
A day.
Is that a minute?
A minute.
No. 10 million hands a day.
Oh, 10 million.
17 million subscribed players is according to the PokerParty.com's website.
So they're making 7 million a day?
That's 17 much. Million players.
Okay, gotcha.
10 million hands a day. $250 million won online every month.
All right, so a lot of people are making money on this, too. I'm assuming that just as many people losing money because that's how the game works.
Yeah.
Think of all the money that's going outside of the United States.
It's true. There's no tax on this at all. Like, Nevada has a great system. In this case, they've got all this money being flowing in, and they're getting the state is actually getting a lot of money from it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not happening with this. I mean, the U.S. government's not collecting any money from these large sites like Party Poker.
Yeah, as far as I know.
Nothing.
I don't know. Yeah, there's legislation that's been moving through, and
sure.
I don't know if anything's being implemented. I'm kind of in the dark on that.
So. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I talked to a friend who I've played poker with before, and friendly games, $20 hand, or $20 buy-in kind of thing, not like what you play. But he was pretty clear that if you're making good money online regularly through online poker, then you must be cheating. So can you please address cheating, the concept of that?
Also, along the same lines, like we just talked about the Diebold voting machine, what keeps the House from changing the cards that you were supposedly dealt?
Let's do that one next. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, either one. Address either one of those.
Well, I'll address that one right now. Rephrase or say the question again.
Okay.
How come the computer doesn't cheat when you can't see the guy's face, you can't see the cards, you don't know what the dealer actually dealt you first, what the dealer has? For all you know, they're just showing you images of cards that they made up right then in order to win the game.
Right. First of all, as we've talked about the amount of money they're making, straight up, without doing anything goofy, no cheating, no not doing anything surreptitious, why the hell would they
risk anything?
They have the trust of the players.
They have to develop our trust as well. They're making all that money. It'd be crazy for them to do anything untoward.
But, a good point though. That trust is is what it's about. Because if you don't trust, or the average Joe does not trust the casino, the online casino. I mean, how do they make sure that they're that's the goal. That's what they have to protect, right?
How do they deal with it? Make sure everything stays on the internet.
Like later today, about 10,000 people are going to go on that have never played online poker before, and they're going to get into the idea of it, and they're going to throw some money, and then they're going to lose it because they don't know how to play the game.
Right.
So somebody loses $400, they're all upset, and they think, hey, wait a second, what if the system's cheating me? They're cheating me. Mm-hmm. And they start making a ruckus about that. How does the casino fight that?
They have overseers, for one thing. From what I hear, there's some of my old poker buddies are overseers for some of the sites.
And what does an overseer do?
They're able to go back and look at any hand, apparently, at any time. And anyone has a complaint, they can go back and they can follow the action and see if anything looks suspicious whatsoever. And then they can quickly bar anyone who seems to have any pattern of suspicious behavior. So we're probably more protected, and it's probably safer, and there's probably less cheating than there's ever been in the live games. Uh-huh. There's certainly cheating now and then. I always thought of it as a pretty clean sport. And when I got out in the business world and a little investment here and there, I found it to be a much dirtier sport than poker, because everything's kind of on the up and up. We're all facing each other every day, and there's a very strong grapevine. If there's any cheating comes up, we all know them. We all know about it. It gets spread all over, and they quickly become persona non grata. So there's most of us, I'd say, in the field of poker, are fairly disgusted by cheating.
Especially when you make a living off of 30 years, cheating doesn't help you.
Because that cheating will cut into those of us who have developed a skill and use that skill. So
the skill thing is always, I think it always gets people. I didn't really get the idea that there's skill behind poker. I always thought it was just straight gambling. Right. Until someone said, take a look at the people that win the tournaments every year. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people play the tournaments, and every year it's the same of 10 people. It's the same people. Right. They're the best poker players in the world. It's not about... And, you look at the statistics, you're like, oh, they actually are better than other people. Can you rate yourself with other people? Do you have friends in the industry, you've been playing poker for a long time. Do you know who's better than you and who you won't play with?
Yeah, somewhat. We all spend a lot of time rating each other. And some of it's fairly accurate. Some of it's fairly delusional. Some of it, Phil Hellmuth is one name that comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
I would say is high on the delusional scale. not to name names.
You're right, Phil. Of course not.
He's from Celebrity Poker.
We all like to rate each other, and it's fairly loosely based and very subjective, because it's really hard to see the results. If every once in a while we've been in situations where there's been kind of a charted how we did in per game, per day, and by a casino, because there was bonuses at the end. And then there was a fairly clear demarcation of who was best. But
would you be in the top 100 players in the world?
Well, that's really hard to say because I'm so out of the circuit. Yeah. But I certainly like to think so. And I think probably fairly easily,
Let's say you're easily in the top 25. Say you're easily in the top 25. It's kind of nice to know that there's not that many people that are as good as you, because it's scary how well you do. Okay, GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. We're speaking with Tom, a professional poker player for 30 years who's now online 100%, and we'll take your calls with questions and comments about anything you'd like. Technology in general is fine. I'd love to get some poker questions, but please feel free to use the phone numbers and give us a ring. Rick Philman's waiting to take your call. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also go to the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Go to the internet. this is Central Coast Public Radio KSP. You listen to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. We'll take your calls with questions and comments about everything you would like to ask us. We just normally won't be correct. And, of course, we also are talking about online poker with Tom, a professional poker player for 30 years. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or visit us online, geekspeak.org. Okay, so...
Lyle.
Yeah,
I'd like to know, a lot of poker players, you know, crunch the odds. They kind of think about what's going to come next, and what are the odds of... They talk about online, too, or on these poker shows on TV. Mm-hmm. They always tell you what the odds of the next card are. But with electronic cards, you really can't do that, can you?
Because the deck is unlimited, or do they limit it?
Oh, no, it really doesn't have anything to do with the deck. We're talking about, we know how many cards are left in the deck, and yeah, the
you've got to know how many cards are left in the deck.
The odds are virtually the same. We're dealing with the numbers, which is, by the way, not that big a deal. Everybody has the fundamentals of, every pro, I should say, has the fundamentals of probability and odds in their mind is sort of a layout of foundation. It's more about pattern recognition and game theory after that, and that's the bulk of the skill.
Okay, and in Texas Hold'em, the game that's played, like all the television shows are about Texas Hold'em, and everyone's doing that. The competition's about Texas Hold'em. In that game, the deck is shuffled every time. There's 52 cards. Yeah. It's not a double deck or anything like that. Right. And so the online casinos emulate that completely. There's a list of cards that are in some database that are shuffled every time, and you're assigned. And one of the things that you said to me. That you have these people that kind
random
of watch.
Random number generator.
I'm assuming. Yeah, okay. Probably. Yeah, right. Probably, yes. Something doesn't actually physically shuffle the bits.
Right.
But it's emulating, the point of it is to emulate the physical world as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you said recently that any hand can look back at any hand in time and kind of assess it, mm-hmm. which means that they save it. So I'm assuming that they emulate it so much so that there's nothing different, really, except you're not touching paper.
No, exactly. Nothing different that I can tell. Okay. Sorry if I didn't,
Cool. PokerParty.com actually has, they kind of go a little bit into about the random number generator.
Oh, cool. Well, how do they do it? Well, you can read up on it in a second. We'll get back to you in just a second, Sean.
Yeah. I'd like to know that, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying they have the entire algorithm up here. Yeah. They just go a little bit into it.
But in larger hands, when you're playing like more traditional five-card stud or something like that, you start to know, and especially when you don't shuffle every time. Well, I guess you have to shuffle every time. That you start knowing with your hand, you start knowing kind of what other people could possibly have. Is that a lot of the game in Texas Hold'em, or is it because you only ever see a maximum seven cards? Right.
Yeah. Right.
Is it much more so how good yours are based on how other people are betting?
Yeah, it's all about the betting. I mean, I think you guys are sort of relating this a little bit to blackjack.
Yeah.
What's left in the deck. It's
never.
Just, yeah, no, that's just not part of the...
Okay,
of the,
so,
it's not factored.
So how do you win?
As I said, I guess pattern recognition is and game theory. Okay, I don't know if any of you know that. But
explain pattern recognition to us.
Well, it's I'm just using the term loosely. I don't know that I've ever studied pattern recognition or anything, but... you know, it's just being able to watch the patterns of how people play their hands. And over time, even online, you've got name. You've got a pseudonym that you're looking at. And this person keeps, say he's every time this situation comes up, I see him re-raise or I see him check raise or I see him do these things. But and you build up patterns in your mind and how they play. You counteract those patterns. And conversely, you try to break up your patterns against people who are recognizing yours. So it's all about this sort of juxtaposition of pattern and non-pattern.
And they talk about tells. When you're sitting across the table from somebody, they have a facial tic or they touch their nose or whatever. And you don't have any of that online.
No, and we used to wonder before. In fact, we sat around, I'd say a few years ago, a bunch of us pros and said, you think you can make a living online? So we're going, I don't see how, you know. And what we thought at the time, and I'm sure some people still do, is that the visuals and the audios are so important, such a big part of the skill. Maybe they were 60%, maybe they were 40%. We didn't know what percentage of the skill it was. And now, as I've played online for a few years, I'm discovering that I, at least for me, it was a very small percentage. Mm. It's maybe it's 5% or 10% of the skill, mm-hmm. and of that skill edge that we have. So, assuming maybe we have a 40% skill edge, then 10% of that 40% is just not that much. You can still obviously make a good living. And the fact is, we get so many more hands that we can play.
You have like a constant getting in hands. You don't have to travel anywhere, and you don't have to make sure that it's there. And you don't have that night of coming and going, oh, there's no hands to play tonight.
So they play each game faster. Now, and not only that, on top of that, we can play two or three games at once. So literally per minute or per hour, I could play maybe 5 to 10 times as many hands I did per hour in live.
So what's to keep you from going online, opening up three accounts on one site, and going in with all three accounts into one game?
They seem to have the software to counteract all of that. I think they're paying millions of dollars, as obviously they're making a lot. They spend a lot to subvert anyone from pulling any shenanigans.
Well, the way that is always talked about is that five of us in this room could all play poker together, mm-hmm. and all of us could be on the phones with each other talking about what we have, and therefore then we have a good assessment of what you might have. Now that seems like something difficult. Do you think they're detecting
that? I think that probably goes on, and that would be a form of collusion, obviously. Mm-hmm. Even if it does go on, I'm sure it does. We've talked a lot about that as pros, and as far as we can tell, it doesn't gain you that much of an edge. You know, if there's the thieves, as we call them out there, that are trying to do that, maybe they get a little edge, and maybe they're not that good of players to begin with. As we used to, when I started in grade school, and we had these brothers that played against us that cheated us all the time, and we knew it. But we were so much better than them, they couldn't make up the difference by a long shot. So I'm kind of hoping that's true online.
Well, the truth of the matter is, even if that's happening, it's not affecting them. You're still able to make your money, and therefore they're not totally gaming the system. And you could theoretically somehow assess when that's being done. Like, you might notice something that's going on weird in the game.
That's it, exactly. I'm relying on 30 years of experience to recognize not only patterns of players, but patterns of things that look suspicious. And I'll tell you, I've seen nothing in my 3 years, and obviously I have this high success rate, but I think a lot of us can feel when something's just not coming up right. It's just coming up too often in a way that just doesn't look right, and I've just never felt one inkling of that. But most players are more superstitious than I am, uh-huh. and I'm sure a lot of them would say, oh, yeah, this one side, I think there's something going on because I have trouble beating it or something, and I just think, that's probably has more to do with just a standard deviation, in probability or odds.
When you're playing these hands and the house is making a little bit, you say they're making like $1 a hand, $1 to $3, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How much are these hands? What's a pot like in the games you play?
Well, and that's the thing, is that the smaller games, as far as I know, they take about the same rake as they do in the larger games, and they always have same thing true in real poker rooms and casinos as it is online. So the bigger game you play, the less percentage the rake is.
Great.
What that's called, the rake is. And so it becomes completely insignificant, the rake does, at the level I'm playing.
Mm.
But those beginning pros that are trying to make a living and playing, say, at $5 and $10 level or something, it's a pretty significant amount of money that's coming out of those pots. So they not only have to beat the other players, they got to beat that rake, too.
And that's why you play high. So you're doing like $1,000.
Well, I play high because I can beat the high players.
So what, about $1,000 a hand? Is it something like that?
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, nah, bigger than that.
Bigger than that, okay.
Yeah, $2,000 or $3,000
a hand. So you're juggling sometimes three games with two or three hands. Like, I called yesterday to confirm that we all had everything set up for the time and stuff, and you're like, sorry, I'm not focusing 100%. I'm playing two games. And I'm like, oh, yeah, playing two games. And it was clear that you were focused on something else. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll see you tomorrow morning, and mm-hmm. we'll do this on air. And then I started thinking about that. You're sitting there at your computer, you've got a couple windows open, and you, on either of those things, every minute, you're winning or losing thousands of dollars.
And mm-hmm. you're watching the patterns like you just described,
yeah.
and keeping them straight.
Mm-hmm. How, I mean, you have to like let go of the money and just play the game, and how do you do it, like psychologically?
Lots of experience, I
think. Experience helps, but as far as, and you're talking about the multitasking aspect?
Yeah, the multitasking aspect, and just the stress, the idea of it.
That's the most difficult thing, and that's keeping a level of focus. The level of focus it takes to really play well is high, and that's why I play so little. I don't enjoy it that much, A, and B, it takes a lot of mental energy to focus that much. And I still take calls from friends, and my conversation is just terrible when I'm playing two games, and especially two shorthanded games, because you're literally just clicking away and you're
shorthand games meaning not a lot of players?
Yeah, it means only, say, three or four players in each game. I mean, it's moving really fast, and you're really watching, and to try to have a conversation is just ridiculous. I do it anyway. But
Do you change your handle a lot, or do you stay with the same handle?
Same handle, and as far as I know, I think most of the sites are blocking from changing the handle. I know on Ultimate Bet, I remember there were guys changing their handles, their pseudonyms fairly often, and I never have. I just stuck with the same one on every one. But
is there any kind of ranking system? I mean, after you've played with someone, can you, you know, like after the game, you can like rank the player and say, yes, I trust this player is a good player.
Oh, you mean my own?
Just out there on the sites. You know, like eBay has their ranking system as a trustworthy buyer. Is there anything like that?
Not that I know of.
You could make a lot of money on that. You could do really well. If you start assessing that and like ranking your handle, that could damage your play and therefore improve everybody else's play, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever get in a game?
I hope nobody ever does that.
Do you ever get in a game where you see a handle and you're like, ooh, I don't want to play with him and just get out?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a number of players that I think are top,
good.
You know, excellent players. I just avoid them just like I always have in my whole life. If you want to make money at it, if you have ego involved, and even, you know, I have some, but I try to keep it at a bare minimum. Why do you want to play against the other best players in the world if you're just trying to make a living? If you want to say, I'm the best player in the world, maybe then you have to go and match yourself up. But that's not a very much interest to me. It's always been a business for me.
So you're sharking around through these waters looking for these guys who are interested in playing a $3,000 hand, but they're not the top of their game.
Or maybe that's the top of their game.
If they are the top of their game, he'll duck out of the room.
Well, if they're the best, if I think they're, you know, one of the top five players in the world playing against me, yeah, I'm not interested in playing them heads up. But if there's one or two of those guys in the game and there's four other guys, I'm not concerned at all about those two top players. I'm focusing more on those other four. And that's what always has happened is the top players would try to kind of avoid each other. Sometimes you can't.
Right.
You get a big hand, and they got a big hand. You're going to go at it.
Right.
And there is some, you know, there's some ego involved. But mostly it's the best pros taken from the lesser pros and those pros taken from the lesser pros. And there's that whole pyramid of all the way down to amateurs who are there strictly for recreation.
Yeah.
Now, at the level I play, if you're there for recreation, you're a very wealthy man, you know,
or
woman.
Sure.
At the level I'm playing, the amateurs might lose a couple hundred thousand a year. Well, I've played against a number of players who that's just a drop in the bucket. That's fun. No problem.
Yeah, right.
So
all right, they're looking for that flush that's going to take everybody out, and the reward of that's worth it.
Yeah, and beating those pros once in a while is all they need.
One shot deal.
Yeah,
exactly. As they talk about it over cognac some night.
Oh, yeah, on the yacht. Sure.
I took Phil to the bank.
Yeah, right.
You keep yourself kind of unknown to some degree. Your handle.
I'm
assuming some people actually, there's some players up there that are playing online and you know who they are and they kind of advertise who they are.
Very few.
Oh, okay.
A friend of mine, Antonio Estambari, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He's one of the few, but he's also owns part of the site, or he's got a little tiny piece of the site, and so they make him public, and he's a draw. And there's a few players like that, but not many. Most of the top players, unless they have a piece of the site and are sort of forced to reveal themselves, are staying, you know, anonymous.
Because that's the game.
Yeah.
All right, we got a couple calls from Pacific Grove. Joe, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. You have a great guest, but I'm a non-gambler, so do you mind if I ask a question that's off-topic here?
It brings back to geekdom.
Please do.
Yeah, and be forewarned, I'm a non-geek or a dummy, as the case may be, so bear with me.
All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Is there a poker term for that, Tom?
I'm sure there's a term in any language, but here's the deal. I keep my computer, you know, well-scrubbed. And I did take your advice last week. I downloaded the two AVG free programs, the AntiSpy and the Antivirus, in addition to other stuff I have. I'm on, if this helps, Windows XP. Now, the question is, when I did a Shields Up check, I got, you know, the ports 1 through 103 was closed with the blue code, and ports 104 through 1055 were green with the stealth code. But you can run your cursor over those little boxes, and they'll pop up a little explanation, sort of.
Uh-huh.
And I was concerned when I put my cursor on box or port number 28. The explanation was used by Amanda Trojan.
Okay, port 28. Somebody look up port 28.
We're diving in here real quick.
Man.
The Trojan list, yeah. Port 28, Amanda.
Well, port 28 is probably used for some other service, so that it's on. is not that big a deal.
Okay.
So, but some other service uses it. Actually, you know what? Port 28 looks like a completely unassigned, meaning that it has no actual.
You probably want to keep port 28 closed. Is
block it off.
Yeah, well, everything is either closed or stealth, so I'm not concerned with that. But I'm wondering why Amanda, used by Amanda Trojan, comes up as a descriptor on
port. Oh, I see.
Port.
So they're warning you that it's a characteristic of the Trojan called Amanda that it will try to tunnel into your machine using port 28.
I see.
So if you leave port 28 open for some other reason or some other service, then they're flagging you saying, hey, Amanda will try to get in port 28.
Is that port open? Is it accessible?
No. All my ports from...
Yeah, it's just a descriptor.
There's a few other Trojans that run on port 28, it looks like. So that's a good one to block.
Well, yeah. It's kind of clever, because what's going to happen on some Trojans is they're actually going to open back up your firewall, and they're actually going to make a connection for themselves. Okay. And they like to use the lower ports, because lower ports really can't be blocked by ISPs, because they're used for very important services. FTP and Telnet and SSH and email and such.
Okay.
So if they use the lower ports... They're not as blocked, and therefore it's going to try to open up, and that happens to be an unassigned port. So that's the reasoning. But no, if it's closed, you're good.
Yeah, and I had the same thing on port 30 and 205, and I didn't go any further than that. There was an agent 421 on Trojan on 30, and
that's WCC. Just a descriptor. So you're doing good.
Yeah, okay. As long as I'm blue and green on the shields up, I'm fine.
Yeah, yes. You're doing good.
Congratulations.
And as a non-geek, I appreciate your making all this intelligible. It's really great.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Bye-bye.
And from Aromas, Bob, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question today, Bob?
I was just looking through my creative system information, and I'm looking at my display adapters, and... NVIDIA GeForce 7800 GT. It says device can be rebalanced, and device capabilities, hardware disabled. What exactly does that mean?
Mr. Cleveland.
That's a great card, especially if you're a gamer. What are you looking at, the NVIDIA control panel?
No, the creative system information. I just happen to be looking through my computer. I put this together a couple of months back, and I'm just getting used to what it has inside.
Is that a Creative Sound Card?
Creative Labs device?
It's a Creative Sound Card.
That's different than the NVIDIA card then, right?
Yeah. So your NVIDIA card is your graphics card.
You're right.
Sounds like it's wanting to do a...
Creative Systems information. So I'm looking through the information, and I've seen the NVIDIA cards, and it gives some information on the card. And... you know, it says status, device driver is loaded, device is configured, device can be rebalanced. And it also says device has no problems, and device capabilities are hardware disabled.
Well, I can make the recommendation that you...
you know
use
what?
The
I
drivers
wouldn't trust,
for NVIDIA. Don't look at Creative's drivers for
Yeah, Creative really... It may tell you a little bit about the graphics, but Creative has no control over the graphics driver or information about that card. I would use the NVIDIA control panel. If you want to get the latest NVIDIA drivers, you just go to NVIDIA.com, and you'll want to download the latest GeForce driver. But I don't know what that means through Creative Interface.
I don't understand exactly quite what you're seeing, and I don't understand the question.
Maybe you can take a screenshot and email it to us. Email it to geeks at geekspeak.org, and they'll have a better idea of what you're looking at.
Bob, thank you for the question. I think that
I wouldn't be worried.
I wouldn't worry about it.
You don't have a problem. Thank you so much
for the call.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Yeah, it's interesting how much software will try to do things for you, and in that situation, it's just not that software is the wrong thing to be looking at a graphics card.
This looks like it shows in the installation log. Driver is loaded. Driver is device is configured. Device can be rebalanced.
Okay.
It's not a problem.
That's not a problem. Let's go ahead and go to northeast, Pennsylvania. Sean, you want to ask this question?
So Dell wants to know, is there a possibility of using an automated player similar to automated stock trading?
Oh,
so
you use a bot in a game room that can play better than a human. What do you think, Tom?
I hear rumors that the bots are starting to happen and that they can play well. It's hard for me to imagine ever playing No Limit Texas Hold'em really well, but I certainly could be wrong about that.
Okay, so
Wait a second.
You have a process in your mind of how to win, and you win really well, and there's a skill involved. Could you describe that skill in a way that I could start writing down what you do?
And you said that the physical interaction is maybe 5% of the game in winning anymore.
Right. So give me a reason why it's too complicated for a computer to win at poker.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I it's just an intuitive thing, and I'm sure you guys know more about this than I do.
Well, I mean,
it just seems with a human element is so erratic and in terms of the play and the patterns, and you actually do get a feel, almost an emotional feel, with the timing of the bets. There, I mean, there is the one cue that we have is how long it takes them to punch that bet in.
Yeah, but that could be easily programmed.
Certainly could. Yeah. Could they program a computer to read every nuance in terms of the timing of the click of the thing, along with the rather erratic patterns? You know, probably they can. Certainly they can, and they probably could make a winning player. I guess I'd hedge what I just said and say it's hard for me to imagine making a really top player.
Somebody maybe who clicks faster might have a better hand.
Yeah, where I think like chess, obviously they've programmed machines to play as good as the best in the world or near them. And that makes more sense to me because it's a much drier, pure logic game, much drier subject, and doesn't have the kind of nuance.
And
in
it's
my mind,
doing that, branch prediction kind of concepts, which you can't really do with poker because people do different things. And every time you go around, every person plays something.
There's those personalities are still involved.
Well, here's
hardware processors.
I know.
Use branch prediction.
Here's the thing that gets me. Tom, last week when we talked first, you'd mentioned that a friend of yours, a pretty famous poker player, you want to mention? Well, we won't get into it, but
no, I don't mind mentioning friends' names.
Okay. Her job is to, she works for one of the casinos.
Annie Duke.
Mm-hmm. And she is called in to assess hands. Mm-hmm. And you said that, as you did earlier in the show, that they can call up any hand that's ever been played so that if someone makes a complaint, that she can go, you don't really play very well, and here's how. And they go, wow, Annie Duke's telling me this. It must be right. And the reputation's okay.
Yeah.
That means that every game that's ever played online is saved. And how much people make and which players are good or easy to assess who loses and why they lose and that kind of data structure leads very well to populating a neural net. You could do that quite easily with that kind of data.
Absolutely.
So the casinos control that, though, and I'm assuming they don't want to create bots because that would mess up their business.
Oh, yeah.
And that data must be priceless.
It is. I'm sure it is priceless. I'm sure you're right. If they had access to all those hands and could input all that, I can imagine they could come up with a pretty good player, but that seems pretty unlikely. They guard that with their lives, I assume.
There's going to be one day when one of those databases is available to hackers, and we're going to see some kind of interesting. We'll see a person that plays like you, and always plays like you because it's modeled after how you play. And when you see a hand a certain way, and all the flags they possibly can save. Now, maybe in those games, maybe in that database, they don't save how long it took someone to actually make the bet, what they were saying, all these things that don't actually matter in the structure of winning or losing to some degree. But it's very very interesting.
I don't think it's worth it yet.
Why not?
Because you could make $100,000 or $200,000 a year. It doesn't seem like the process you'd have to go through to create the algorithm would be worth the payoff.
Really? Well, if you were playing in all the casino houses, I mean, one hacker doing it.
That's true, but you have a high probability of being caught. The more you do it, the more they can compare, hey, here's the same thing. I'm sure these houses talk to each other, the poker online sites. I'm sure that they have some kind of back-end communication that goes on so that they can look for just that type of thing.
Right. Although I happen to know there's a horse bettor who is an acquaintance of mine who did exactly that, who set up algorithms and beats the horses out of a lot of money. And he's able to somehow have the computers kind of phone in the bets and all the tracks all over the country. So who knows?
So he sits back and lets horses make him money?
Yeah.
Why do people have such a negative feeling about poker from the perspective that, like my friend who plays poker even says, well, if he's making money online, he's cheating. Why do people that even have some knowledge of the game still feel like there's something sleazy about it?
I think it's like most things, it was dramatized and mythologized over time. It used to be such an underground activity, and we were considered underground characters. So there's still a lot of people out there who subscribe to the kind of that's the essence of it, is it's this underground activity. I think it more was a geeky activity because, you know, understanding game theory and, as I said, and probability and just playing a game well, you know. But, yeah, I think the general populace still has some of that, and I know the religious right's out there utterly against this. But, you know, I think as poker has come more to light, it's become this popularized on TV and everything, I think that it's getting more accepted, and some of us, instead of being these sleazy underground characters, are now TV stars, which, yeah. And I've always said, I think really we're somewhere in between those two. We're not sleazy in general, and we're not really stars. We're just people trying to make a living.
Yeah. Do you do competitions? Yeah.
Competitions?
Yeah. Do you do, like, you know...
Tournaments?
Tournaments, yeah.
You know, I've started... When tournaments first started around 1980... Well, they started a little earlier than that, but they got popularized by Emerald Slim, kind of started that movement around 1980, and I played in a few of those, and I found it to be too much like a job. So you're stuck at the table for 10, 12, 14 hours a day, and if you're lucky enough to get into the end, you've put in a lot of hard work and a lot of stress. And I just thought, I don't need that. I like to come and go as I please, and I guess I'm a little bit of freedom monger, so I prefer not to play tournaments.
And watching professional poker tournaments, I mean, it's a bunch of guys sitting there stone-faced. I mean, it's really unexpressionless.
Yeah.
It's boring.
Oh, it's boring as hell. I think
some people find it exciting, but I've watched one, and it's like, this guy's not doing anything. I know there's a lot of interplay going on, but,
yeah.
You know.
And most pros are pretty stony.
Even golf is more fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like golf.
Have you noticed, Tom, have you noticed yourself changing the way you play because you know no one can see you? Do you go... And, like, shake your head and, like,
yell
do
at
all
the
these
screen.
Tells?
Oh,
or do you still do play the same way?
I've always been fairly stoic. I mean, there's kind of two ways to hide your tells, and one is to be as animated as you can be and always changing up. And my way was like most of the pros you'll watch on TV and stuff, is pretty stoic. You know, yeah. I just try to remain exactly the same all the time.
When
when I'm in my home,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while.
Do you laugh at people?
Damn it. Yeah. But very seldom. Usually I'm just plunking away. And, uh-huh. Yeah.
So you're never laughing at people? You're never going, oh, this guy's a chump? Things like that?
Not so much that.
Because I got to say, I love
some
like
of
nice
the plays
guy.
Rather humorous. Yeah.
Tom doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would do that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of getting a mic in and listening to you actually play and, like, assessing what it is. But I understand that you can't really do that because you're definitely focused. But yeah. I'm sure your inner dialogue...
Maybe next time I'm on, we'll go ahead and play.
Yeah. Your inner dialogue must be wonderful.
Yeah. As long as Lyle joins one of the games.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, right.
I'd actually pay money to watch that.
Yeah, well, you'd have to pay for it. I couldn't play.
Yeah. And we can play one hand, and if we lose, we get a divorce.
It could be fun, Lyle.
Yeah, right. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you coming out and talking to us about online poker. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think it's a kind of a geeky subject in that it's this whole moving a whole industry to an online realm. And I think the legal issues aren't addressed yet, and it's kind of interesting. And I would assume that you really want things to stay the way they are, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's just so much freedom for me, and somewhat lucrative, and mostly it's about, God, I can make a living anywhere. I can live anywhere. Yeah. That's a good feeling because we're sort of tied to these... some of the worst places in the world, as far as I'm concerned, to live, which is Las Vegas or mm-hmm. Reno or L.A.
Atlantic City.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like the poker ended up, the strongholds ended up in the worst of places to live. And then I sort of found, you know, Northern California to be much more to my liking. And then there's a few games around.
Well, Tom, I appreciate that you're here in Northern California and Santa Cruz. And yeah. I appreciate it very much you coming on to GeekSpeak. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks,
GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Our guest today was Tom, a professional poker player for over 30 years, who's now online, and you'll see him all the time. The geeks this morning, John Tracy, Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, answering our phone as he does every week, Rick Philman. Thank you all for participating on GeekSpeak. And thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. To those that called in, thanks for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Next week on our show, we're talking about the light pick, an invention, a Santa Cruz invention, about a guitar pick that gives you more than just playing music and has a great feel. We'll be talking about that next week on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell.